What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 129. Today, we're going to be discussing insulin leaked with cancer. So we've had a few podcasts on cancer. Just if you want to learn about it, we have it's called Keto for Cancer Part 1 and Part 2. So you can go to the website and check that out. But today, we're going to focus specifically on how insulin, just what promotes insulin, also causes and promotes cancer as well. So a lot of this is coming from the book, The Cancer Code by Jason Fung. So Tom just finished reading this book, and he wants to talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, so Dr. Jason Fung, if you guys aren't aware, he is my go-to source for anything like fasting. Is he your like go-to source for fasting as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's written a book. It's called The Complete Guide to Fasting. He wrote a book on the obesity code, the diabetes code, and now his fourth book is The Cancer Code. He might have more, but those are the only ones that I'm aware with. He are aware of. He is a kidney doctor, a nephrologist up in, I think it's Toronto. So the guy knows his thing, and pretty much when you're an expert on something, everything seems to follow that. Like, he is pretty much mostly focused on insulin. So, like, surprise, surprise, his cancer connection is all about insulin. But after reading through the book, I mean, hey, he makes a very, very strong argument, and it makes a ton of sense.
It's funny how that works. So we've said it a million times, but if you're a like cardiologist, everything is about the heart. And like you said, he's a nephrologist about the kidneys. Like, it's just, it's funny how they look the world through such a small, like, microscope.
Yeah. I mean, like, his whole, I didn't read the obesity code, but I know, like, the diabetes code is all about insulin. The Complete Guide to Fasting is all about lowering insulin. Did you read the obesity code?
Yeah, I read the obesity code. Yeah, and it's just, he definitely believes in, like, the insulin model of obesity, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, like, it seems like the focus of all his work is mostly centered around insulin.
Uh-huh.
And I agree with it because, hey, insulin is a very, very powerful hormone.
Oh, it is. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's a master hormone. It's been around for a billion years.
We've talked about cancer many times in the past, like Tyson said, so we're just kind of going to do, like, a brief overview. So, like, what causes cancer? Cancer is pretty much caused by chronic sublethal damage. So if it's lethal, you die, you don't get the cancer. If it's not chronic, then that damage can be healed. So it has to be chronic and sublethal. So think of something like cigarettes. You smoke cigarettes long enough, you're likely to develop cancer. So some cancer treatments, unfortunately, can be chronic and sublethal. Things like radiation also fits this model. So sometimes, hey, you go in for treatment for one type of cancer, you get a bunch of radiation or some chemo. Yeah, you could get healed of that one cancer, and then later on you get to end up developing another.
Mm-hmm.
So just think of that chronic sublethal damage. That's the cause for most cancer. And every cell in the body can become cancerous because they're basically just reverting back to primitive, like, unicellular organism type things. They're using those primitive abilities. It's called the Warburg effect. That's when you're using fermentation and glycolysis as your primary fuel sources instead of oxidative phosphorylation. So the seed is everywhere, but the cause for cancer is really in the soil. So cancer goes through three steps. It has to go through all three of these for it to become lethal. Transformation, that's where a normal cell turns into a cancer cell. Progression, that's just cancer cells growing, that excessive growth that everybody equates to cancer. And then metastasis, which is when that cancer spreads to different parts of the body, and that's where it really becomes deadly. So the first part let's talk about is problems with energy production. this is what causes that transformation, that first step of cancer. So oxidative phosphorylation, that's where our body's using fat and oxygen to create fuel. So the only harmful, or the only byproducts really, are water and CO2. So there's really nothing harmful. Water, we can pee out, or there's other parts of the body that we can use water for. CO2, we exhale. So those are easy to get rid of. No harmful byproducts really created from oxidative phosphorylation. This is what we want to use to produce energy all the time if we can. Glycolysis, however, creates many products, byproducts, including pyruvate, which can then be used for fermentation, which is another inefficient way to produce energy, and it doesn't use oxygen. So cancer cells, even when oxygen is present, they undergo glycolysis and fermentation to produce energy. Very, very inefficient and very damaging to the body.
Yeah, just very dirty ways to produce energy and primitive, like Tom said. So we actually have an entire podcast on fat versus carbohydrate metabolism. It's called like, which is a cleaner fuel. So if you go to the website and type in cleaner fuel, we take a deep dive into all the harmful byproducts of glycolysis, which is just how our carbohydrates are processed to produce energy. And it's a ton of very harmful things, and fat it doesn't have that problem. Like, fat is a very, very clean fuel source.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, think of it like a coal mine versus a windmill. Like, which one's cleaner?
Exactly. Obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, carbs are coal in that example.
Yeah. So the fermentation results in the creation of lactic acid. So cancer cells create a lot of lactic acid, and this lactic acid kills surrounding cells to increase its chance for survival. So now it doesn't have to compete for nutrients. It also increases inflammation, which provides more blood vessels, nutrients, and growth factors to that area. And that lactic acid also inhibits immune cells. So cancer cells are now getting more nutrients, they're getting better blood supply, and they're also able to like avoid detection and survive longer because they're damaging immune cells.
Yeah, no, and lactic acid is a byproduct of all that glycolysis that's happening within the cell. So it's kind of the perfect scenario to make this one cell, which has now become very selfish, survive and kill everything around it.
Yeah. So, bam, right there, that's how cells are able to transform, that transformation, that first step of cancer. So now we're going to talk about where, like, insulin gets involved and Dr. Fun's whole argument. So obesity is linked to 20 to 30% of common cancers. So cancer has many different causes. So you can't really link something like smoking cigarettes to obesity, because those are two different types of stressors, completely different toxins. So the first study I want to mention is a cancer prevention study too, which began in 1982 with over 1 million participants. So in 2003, over 20 years of this study has been going on, the following conclusions were made. The risk of cancer began to rise at a BMI of 30, that's obesity, and at a BMI of over 40, 52 to 62% had more deaths from cancer. That's a really big number. Like, mm-hmm. So the fattest people, the people with the highest BMIs, had the most deaths from cancer. So the deaths from liver cancer increased by 450%, and pancreatic cancer increased by 261%. So think, hey, if you are obese, there's a good chance you're going to have problems with your liver from dealing with so much extra fructose. Yeah, your pancreas is also going to have a lot of problems from creating so much insulin. These are things that are obesity-related issues. If you think about, or actually, if you take cigarette smokers out of that whole pool, because cigarettes have a slimming effect, the risk of cancer would change from that 52 to 62% number to a staggering 88%. So that number is actually really higher because cigarettes cause you to lose weight, and we're just looking at population as a whole. So that number is crazy high, 88% increase from obesity.
Yeah, and I think people, not that they lie to themselves, but they just probably don't know a lot about BMI. But BMI is not the best metric, but we did a podcast, I think Article of the Week, or it might have been actually an entire podcast, talking about the percentage of Americans that are considered metabolically healthy. And what was it, 12% or 16%?
I believe it's 12%.
12%. So the vast majority of people out there are going to be real close to that BMI of 30. Now, you might not look obese, but you're going to have a BMI pretty close to 30. And that's just, it's common in America, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The BMI isn't the best measurement when you're looking at individuals. But when you're looking at a population as a whole, it is a pretty good measurement. Because there are always, I mean, take yourself, trends. For example, like you're big, you're lean.
Yeah.
I don't know what your BMI is. I'm sure like if you look at just your BMI measurement, your number might be considered to be unhealthy, even though that's just because of muscle.
Yeah.
But there are not that many people walking around at your height and weight that are built like you. You know what I mean? Like
Most
of them have a really high body fat percentage.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. BMI, is this easier to get BMI than it is to get body fat percentage? So if weight gain increases cancer risk, does weight loss decrease it? It sure does. A study over 100 years ago by Peyton Rouse with severely restricting food availability in mice decreases the risk of cancer by one half. In 1940, Dr. Albert Tannenbaum did a similar study. He found that restricting carbohydrates alone had a better impact on reducing cancer than reducing overall calories. Again, reducing carbohydrates, that lowers your insulin. These two studies sound a lot like the studies that got Thomas Seyfried started on his interest on the metabolic theory of cancer. Do you remember that study?
No, I don't, but I know Thomas Seyfried is kind of the guy we always promote from kind of the metabolic, like you said, the metabolic theory of cancer, because that's what I agree with personally from all the reading I've done, from all the research I've done. Not that I'm a cancer expert, I'm not, but I think I know enough that I can like smell bullshit, and everything coming from Thomas Seyfried passes that test. You know, it all makes sense.
Yeah. So Seyfried, his background was in genetics, and he was looking at comparing like a new drug to just calorie restriction, and he found that the calorie restriction had the same results as this new drug, and he's like, well, who's going to want to take this drug if they could just eat less and get the same results? And then he's like, well, why did that work? Why is that like preventing cancer? And then he started like looking at the literature and then just kind of like went down that whole rabbit hole. So that's how he got started. He found out that restricting calories results in like cancer prevention, having better cancer outcomes. Mm. Yeah. So that's from Tripping Over the Truth. From that whole book. So we looked at calorie restriction and eating more. So blood glucose also is tightly regulated by these things. So for each increase of blood glucose by 1 millimole per liter, that increases your risk of fatal cancer by 5% for men and 11% for women. Type 2 diabetics, that's a problem with blood glucose, they have an increased risk of fatal cancer by 25%. So what do these three things have in common? It's insulin. So diabetes, weight gain, calorie restriction, all that has to do with monitoring or pretty much keeping your insulin in check. So insulin is a hormone released by our pancreas when we consume food. Carbs have the largest impact, and it puts our bodies into a fed state. So high insulin levels can be measured by C-peptide, a byproduct of the creation of insulin. High C-peptide is linked to 270 to 292% risk of colorectal cancer. That's a staggering number. High insulin levels more than double the risk of developing cancer, even in healthy individuals, and increases cancer death for non-obese, non-diabetics by 250%. This is according to a National Health and Nutrition Study by NHANES. So in diabetics, insulin injections increase the risk of cancer by 44%. When compared to metformin. Metformin is another drug that you can use that doesn't increase your insulin to help regulate your type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, metformin tells your liver to stop producing as much sugar. Because, I mean, we've done a podcast on diabetes in the past. I really recommend you listen to it. But whenever I see or hear a diabetic, and this is type 2 diabetes, not type 1, because type 1 is a little different, but when a type 2 diabetic is told to take insulin, or I see them taking insulin, it really infuriates me, because the problem with diabetes is too much insulin. And the only thing you're doing by injecting insulin is covering up the symptoms. You're not actually creating any sort of solution to the root problem. You're just making it worse. But yeah, if you want to learn more about diabetes, check out our podcast on diabetes, because it goes into all of that.
So what does insulin have to do with cancer? Well, insulin is a growth factor. So bear with us, because it's going to get a little bit nerdy, even though it already was a little bit nerdy with all those statistics.
Yeah.
So insulin is a growth hormone, but it's also a nutrient sensor, because you need nutrients to grow. Just your body can't grow without those nutrients. So PI3K is ranked fourth in the most common oncogene mutations in the body. PI3K is stimulated by insulin. When nutrients are present, both PI3K and insulin levels increase, giving the signal to grow. When we are fasting, both levels switch our body into a state of repair, and they both lower. So it's a lot easier and a lot more efficient to clean a movie theater in between movies than during a showing. So, hey, when everybody's cleared out of the movie theater, it's a lot easier to do that cleaning. That's that repair and maintenance. You don't want to be doing it with everything crowded.
Yeah, and that happens when we're fasting, when we're not in a fed state. So that's when insulin's low and PI3K is low.
Yeah, exactly. So here's like a real world example. In Ecuador, there's a community of 300 dwarfs. Their average height is 4 feet. Cancer is practically non-existent there. They produce growth hormone, but not IGF-1. The dwarfs have a cancer rate of less than 1%, but their relatives that are not dwarfs have a cancer rate of 20%. And the dwarfs are also protected against diabetes. So despite having what I would consider to be worse genetics, they seem to have a much better like disease risk than their other relatives. So what's going on there? This is because the IGF-1 is activated by insulin through the PI3K pathway.
And so this is where they have some sort of genetic mutation that this doesn't happen.
Yes, they do not produce IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1. They don't produce that. So this PI3K pathway doesn't get activated.
Mm-hmm.
But their relatives who do have it do get it, and that's the main difference between that less than 1% cancer risk to a 20% cancer risk. So what are other growth factors and other nutrient sensors that have a risk with cancer? We've all heard about mTOR. mTOR detects insulin, protein, and oxygen levels in the blood. Another one is AMPK. It's a nutrient sensor that acts kind of like a fuel gauge. So like lots of AMP, which is like, it's not energy, it's a precursor to energy. And little ATP, which is actual energy, means that you have little energy stored and results in high AMPK. That means that your body, the AMPK is telling your body that it needs to start producing more energy. So high AMPK lowers mTOR and increases mitochondria production and increases autophagy. AMPK is higher when we're fasting. So what that's doing is it's telling our body to increase the mitochondria production so you can produce more energy. It's telling our bodies, hey, we're, for whatever reason, we don't have enough energy right now. We need to ramp up our energy production.
Yeah, we actually touched on this in a completely different podcast, but a podcast on apple cider vinegar. Because AMPK, it's also sometimes abbreviated as CAMP, CMPK, is it's like a dieter's best friend. That's basically telling our body to mobilize food. That's telling our body to mobilize energy because energy is low. And that's something actual vinegar or acetic acid helps turn on. And it's one of the ways it can help help you lose weight.
Yeah. So in this case, we want AMPK to be higher because we want low mTOR. This is not all the time, but at certain times. You want high MPK because you want increased mitochondria. You want that to be higher. You want to increase autophagy. Autophagy is breaking down cells. So this is something that we want to be higher. So AMPK, mTOR, and insulin, they all act as nutrient sensors to let our bodies know whether to focus on growth or repair. We cannot do both efficiently at the same time. So it kind of works as like a teeter-totter. When one's high, the other one's low. When the other one's high, the other one's low. So you can't do growth and repair at the same time. if we need a repair, then apoptosis and autophagy must increase. I know you hate that I say apoptosis, Tyson, but like that's just the way I know it.
Yeah, so I know. I say apoptosis now, too, because every time I say apoptosis, I know people think I mispronounce it. So,
hey, I'm dumb. I just sound out the words, and that's the way it's spelled.
Yeah, basically.
So billions of cells are created and destroyed every day. This balance is essential. When you have old, damaged cells that aren't functioning properly, they need to either go through apoptosis or autophagy. They need to get destroyed so they can be replaced with better, fully functional cells. Cancer cells, however, avoid this apoptosis. That's why it's able to grow uncontrollably. So apoptosis has two triggers, extrinsic, which is a death receptor, and intrinsic, mitochondrial. So that the intrinsic comes from the mitochondria. They're saying, I'm damaged. I can't keep up with the energy demands. I need to go. I need to be destroyed. I think we have a whole podcast just talking about that process completely, right?
We do, yeah.
Was that the retrograde response?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's on the Cute Over Cancer talk, yeah.
And then the extrinsic, the death receptor, that is just a signal to have your immune cells come by and destroy your fat cell. So the IGF-1 through the PI3K pathway overrides apoptosis. So even if a cell is damaged and the mitochondria is giving the signal for death, it is then overruled. So this allows damaged cells to not only survive, but are given the signal to grow. Because remember, the IGF-1, that's an insulin-like growth factor, that's activated. Those levels are high when we're in a fed state, when there's a lot of nutrients around. So our body's in that growth mode, not that repair mode. And unfortunately, mitochondria are susceptible to damage, are constantly needed to be broken down or replaced. When they're broken down or replaced, that's known as autophagy, or in this case, more specifically, mitophagy. Mitophagy just refers to when mitochondria are broken down. However, mTOR overrides the signals and prevents cells from doing this internal cleaning. Both of these, IGF-1 and mTOR, when those levels are high, it overrides the autophagy signal and it overrides the apoptosis signal. So these cells stay damaged, the mitochondria stay damaged, and this damaged cell is like surviving and being told to grow. This is cancer right here. This is why cancer grows and grows and grows, because they're not told to repair themselves. They're not told to die either. So they just stay alive forever, essentially, and just keep growing and never repair themselves.
Not to really talk about either carbs or keto or plant-based, nothing like that, but from an evolutionary standpoint, this is really the last like 100 years, I mean, shit, probably even like 70 years, this is the one time in history where we've had access to all the food we could ever want. Like specifically today, if I wanted something delivered to my house, like literally 50,000 calories worth of food, I can get that delivered with a push of a button through my phone. This is the first time in human history we've had access to be in the fed state 24/7, 365. Like, it's not natural, and it's going to come with consequences.
I mean, yeah, that's so true. Like, you don't even really need to burn that many calories to consume calories like you would have, like, if you were out on the Serengeti.
You had to catch your food.
You needed to hunt down that elephant to get those 50,000 calories. Yeah. You don't even need to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, the app, I can do DoorDash, and I can get, whatever, 20 Taco Bell burritos delivered within 20 minutes, you know, and that's just not natural at all.
So in this state, with the mTOR being high, the IGF-1 being high, AMPK will be low. And so if the AMPK is low, these cells will not create new mitochondria. So they're not getting that signal to create new machinery to produce new energy. So they have the same broken down mitochondria. They're not building new ones. They're not replacing the old ones. And they're not dying. This is cancer right here. Pretty much what this results in is chronic sublethal damage. That's the cause of cancer, chronic sublethal damage. That damaged mitochondria and all these signals to keep growing.
Is this something he says in his book?
Yes, this is something that Dr. Jason Funk comes up with in his
book. Oh, okay. Because that's great.
With it, I'm not that clever.
Yeah, that is a great little thing. Because, I mean, it's true. Because I always say, like, you know, what's the root cause of cancer? And I always say, like, it's mitochondrial dysfunction. But that, like, whenever I say that, people's eyes kind of glaze over. But if I say chronic sublethal damage, at least they know those words and that can create kind of a conversation.
Yeah, and it's also more vague because something like cigarettes, that's, you know, chronic sublethal damage. You know, like eating a donut, activating these insulin, this mTOR, that IGF-1 chronically is another type of chronic sublethal damage. Those chimney sweepers back in old London, like those children, they were like the youngest people to develop cancer on a regular basis because they were chronically dirty, like covered in soot or suet, whatever, or not suet, is it soot, whatever?
Well, just smoke
the dirty
particles?
Ass chimney smoke, yeah. Yeah. They were discovered in that shit all the time.
Uh-huh.
And they were developing testicular cancer at like the age of 8.
Yep.
Like it was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like all these things, they're all chronic, they're all sublethal, and it's all damage.
Yep, exactly. It's just, that's a great little like catchphrase.
What can we do about it? Because all this sounds really bad. Well, it's actually really simple. Because the scenario that we just talked about with the mTOR being chronically high, the IGF-1 being chronically high, the insulin being chronically high, the AMPK being chronically low, all that is really easy to fix. So pretty much just to balance all those out, to get them working for you and not against you, is to practice intermittent fasting. That'll get all those things in the right levels, and follow a low carbohydrate diet. That way you're still able to replenish, get all the nutrients that you need without spiking your mTOR, without spiking your insulin, without spiking your IGF-1, and without lowering that AMPK. Like, that's the best way to do it, is like that 1-2 thing, just intermittent fast. So don't eat all day, every day. Follow a low carbohydrate diet, and that should pretty much take care of itself. A few extended fasts here and there is also a great idea. I'm a big fan of fasting. I know Tyson's a big fan of fasting. Dr. Jason Fung is like the biggest fan of fasting in the world. And what that does, that just gives your body even more signals to do that autophagy, to do that mitophagy, so that if you do have these damaged cells, these damaged mitochondria, they're getting killed off, they're getting broken down, they're getting replaced. That's what you want to really avoid cancer. And of course, like we just talked about that chronic sublethal damage, just avoid any sublethal chronic stressors, things like cigarettes, things like seed oils and other toxins. It's really quite simple.
What I see when you say practice intermittent fasting, follow a low carb diet, and every once in a while do an extended fast, you're basically saying follow an ancestral way of eating. That's all you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's 100%.
Because that's exactly
sure that's
what they would do.
Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's why cancer is a disease of like today.
Yep.
And wasn't really a thing to worry about 500 years ago.
Exactly. Because everyone on the planet practiced intermittent fasting, followed a low carb diet, and had a few extended fasts a couple times a year. Everyone.
Yeah. I mean, it was just natural.
It was a way of life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's like, yeah, basically just revert back to an ancestral way of eating.
That's it. Yeah. It's really like cancer, and even like Tom had told me how Dr. Jason Fung, he thinks cancer is very smart and very hard to defeat, and someone like Thomas Seyfried would disagree with that. You know, he thinks cancer is very stupid and easy to defeat. And I think I would approach it from the fact, or from the stance, that cancer is dumb, because at least you can be optimistic with the treatment. You know, like the treatment really is this simple. Follow an ancestral way of eating, and it will really reduce your risk of cancer. And if you kind of go down the Jason Fung route that cancer is like extremely smart, then at that point the solution is going to have to be very complex. And I just don't think that's, I don't know, optimistic, especially if you have cancer.
Well, they do disagree on some things, but I mean, the way to prevent it, they would agree on. So, like, hey, like what we just talked about, avoid those chronic sublethal stressors and follow a low carbohydrate diet, get your insulin, get all those growth factors in check. Like, do that, fasting here and there. Like, they would agree with that 100%. What they just kind of disagree with is some of the like things, like what actually happens in your body once cancer develops. So the way to prevent it is the same. So they agree on a lot. It's just like they have a couple slight differences.
The details, yeah. And it's funny, when I see this and I read this paper, I always, like, I connected a lot of stuff back to, like, bodybuilding, just mindset, bodybuilding world. So in a bodybuilding world, if I told someone to lower their insulin, lower their mTOR, and increase their AMPK, they would think you were crazy. Because you want all of those things in the opposite to actually put on muscle growth. And muscle growth to an extreme extent, which a bodybuilder would want. You know, it's nothing natural about being 250 pounds lean, but that it just promotes how I think unhealthy like hardcore bodybuilding is.
Yeah, I mean, the one good thing about that is if you are a hardcore bodybuilder and you are increasing all these things all the time, or at least trying to, at least when you're like working out and you're doing a lot of intense exercise, you are giving your body a giant signal for autophagy.
Yeah, like, to repair.
You are burning that many calories, you are, you know, burning that much energy, you can't have these weak mitochondria laying around. Mm-hmm. So those intense workouts that they do, at least like it does kind of, I'm not going to say it's balancing it out because I don't know how bad the diet is and how many other growth factors that they're taking along with their food.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they are giving some signals for breakdown and repair.
Yeah,
it's
that's
not
a good point.
100% growth, even though that's what they're trying to do.
That's what they want. Yeah, exactly. But
I don't know what would happen if, because we talked about this in a previous podcast. If you're like, was it the Milo Sarkov like system, where he's trying to give his body all these supplements while he's working out, the essential amino acids, a bunch of carbohydrates to spike his insulin while he's working out. I don't know if your body would still go through autophagy if you're getting all these growth factors at the same time, because that would be some kind of conflicting arguments.
Well, yeah, because basically we've said, like, when you train, your body is breaking down muscle, it's breaking down fat for fuel, all that type of stuff, and Milos is trying to prevent that to, like, the nth degree.
Yeah, so somebody like him just, like, sees autophagy as a bad thing altogether.
Mm-hmm.
But, or at least with that strategy, but I also know that the way that he follows his eating plan kind of goes away with that. Because, like, he does do some sort of intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's just about that. But he is focused in that bodybuilding world. He was, like, a top 10 bodybuilder. He trains top bodybuilders in the world. So, like, yeah, it is kind of a different thing.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But okay, well, that's the podcast. Hope you guys learned something. I know it's a little complicated, so like I said, I recommend you listen to the other cancer podcasts we have, because it will kind of paint the whole picture. This is just one piece of it, and you can find that at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate, subscribe, and review. You can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.